We have something coming in, let's say, a month or two. It's going to be like the new standard, I think, for making a Bitcoin or crypto app secure.
That's Alex Leishman, CEO of River Financial, revealing a game-changing security feature that could reshape Bitcoin custody. But that's not all River is changing.
The interest from your dollars in River now earn a high-yield interest rate, 3.8%, and you accrue the Bitcoin daily. Everyone else is just keeping all the interest. We're giving it back to our clients.
Today, Alex challenges popular Bitcoin narratives and shares insights on River's explosive growth. He also explains what Microsoft shareholders need to acquire Bitcoin and tells us a controversial opinion about the US dollar.
I genuinely believe that we're moving towards a dual currency era.
And just when you think you understand where Bitcoin payments are heading.
I mean, look, actually, this is going to sound really heretical.
This is a conversation you don't want to miss.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Sitting down with Alex Leishman. Alex, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's great to be back.
It's great to have you back. It's been a big week for you.
It has.
Big announcement of River getting the Bitcoin denominated yield.
Bitcoin interest on cash.
Bitcoin interest on cash. I don't want to say yield.
Not Bitcoin yield. It's not BlockFi.
No.
Very different.
This is the smartest application of this idea that people have been striving for years now. The strive for something like this has led to many blowups, BlockFi, Celsius, list goes on. But it seems like you guys took something that other companies are doing and benefiting with it for themselves and then giving it to your customers. Let's start here. And we got a bunch of other stuff to talk about too, but this product is awesome.
Oh yeah, thanks. You know, there's a lot of confusion just because we're a Bitcoin company and we use the word interest. A lot of people immediately assume, oh, like BlockFi, where does the yield come from? It's like, well, no, actually, what we're doing is, you know, you've always been able to have dollars at River. Any Bitcoin exchange you can have dollars on. But everyone else is just keeping all of the interest for themselves. We're giving it back to our clients, right? Dollars always have to sit in a bank. And so what we've done is all the hard work behind the scenes from a regulatory and compliance perspective to be allowed to pay the interest from the dollars sitting on River to our clients. And what we do is we auto convert that daily into Bitcoin. So the interest from your dollars on River now earn a high yield interest rate, 3.8%, and you accrue the Bitcoin daily from your cash deposits. And so there's no extra risk. We're just simply now taking the interest that we used to earn on cash deposits at River and giving it back to you. And so we think that this is the future of banking, really. I genuinely believe that we're moving towards a transitionary period where we're going to live in this dual currency era where people save in Bitcoin but still spend and earn in dollars, which means people will still have some dollar or cash savings. But they'd much rather earn interest on that cash in a harder currency.
Yeah. I mean, this is, if you look at Tether, essentially what they've been doing is issuing their stable coin and then having liquid reserves predominantly held in U.S. treasuries, U.S. treasury notes, particularly short-term debt. And then that's what everybody has been basically lauding Tether for the last 2 years, is the fact that they've been able to amass this large treasury to back their stable coins, and they've just been spinning the yield that they're getting from these short-term notes into Bitcoin and other assets and reaping insane profits as a product of that strategy. And River has decided, we're going to do something similar, but we're going to let the customers benefit as well.
Exactly. Yep. And behind the scenes, it's a fully FDIC-insured bank account, $250,000 of FDIC insurance per user. And the cash is managed very conservatively by our bank partner. Almost all of it is just kept at the Federal Reserve and earns the federal funds rate. So it's not even being lent out for like corporate loans and things like that.
Very vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
Which very is interesting. Vanilla.
Yeah.
But it's this way to very vanilla, but bringing something to market that has been lost for decades now, which is you have cash in account and you actually get interest on that. That's an idea that's become foreign. It's become a foreign concept in the world of banking more broadly, not even just within Bitcoin. But it is possible to make sure that your customers are actually getting a benefit from this. And then the whole using the interest that you accrue from holding it at the Fed, just gaining the Fed funds rate on top of the capital in an account and putting it into Bitcoin, I think is going to be a gear shift that I tweeted out earlier this week. Like, I think you guys are going to set a standard where customers are going to be getting to demand this, where they recognize the yield on US dollars isn't as appealing, particularly if it's 3.8% and inflation's at real inflation, that's 6, 7, 8%, wherever it may be. You want to make sure that you're accruing interest into an asset that will actually preserve value throughout time.
Absolutely. And you know, if you look at what your effective interest rate would have been if you had earned interest, Bitcoin interest on your cash over the last 4 years, so it's substantially higher than the base interest rate. And you know, some people will say, well, you know, I could earn interest in my regular bank account and then take that interest and then buy Bitcoin with it. But the reality is people aren't doing that. And also a cool thing about this product is you're accruing it daily. So we're kind of like, you know, kind of you're getting the Bitcoin each day before the end of the month. In a normal bank, your interest is paid out at the end of the month. So you don't even get that cash, you know, throughout the entire month. We're buying Bitcoin on your behalf day by day throughout the month. So you get to kind of get some of that Bitcoin early.
Yeah, it's a DCA strategy in a way. Mm-hmm. And you've been tweeting, you're saying this is a sly roundabout way to speculative attack the dollar. Let's get into the dynamics of that. You think about it applied at scale.
Yeah, at scale, right? And you know, we're the first ones to do this in the US, but we won't be the last. I think that a lot more people will launch this and hopefully down the road, even more traditional firms. There's trillions of dollars in savings accounts in the United States for both individuals and businesses. And, you know, if we can get that transitioned over to earning interest in Bitcoin, you end up with this interesting dynamic where you have this basically like base demand just sort of sucking up the Bitcoin supply. And the interest rate dynamics are also interesting because when interest rates go up, there's more interest being generated in these accounts, and so that's more Bitcoin being purchased. Interest rates go up. When that happens, typically you see sort of more pressure on the Bitcoin price because there's a bit of an inverse correlation between interest rates and Bitcoin price. But now we're basically taking that increase in interest rate and plowing it back into Bitcoin. And the reverse of this is, you know, when interest rates go down, Bitcoin tends to pump. Well, yes, when interest rates go down, now you're maybe earning a little bit less in interest on that cash, but the interest you have earned in Bitcoin is pumping. So your effective interest rate has gone up. So it's a kind of cool dynamic there.
And it makes you wonder, like, is now that it's out, because it's so simple, and it's almost like you've opened up Pandora's box, because the way businesses have been operating, traditional banks and even businesses in our industry that do this, they've just been keeping all of the yield. And now that you guys have, again, opened Pandora's box and said, no, we're going to share it with our users. It's their cash. Of course, you guys are taking a little rip and getting some benefit from it too. But I think really holding the rest of the industry's feet to the fire, the broader commercial banking system's feet to the fire, and saying this is the way it should work, and we're actually going to bring it to the market. It'll be interesting to see how people react to that over time. I think people, like you mentioned, I think people in the industry will launch similar products at some point in the near to medium term. But does this send a signal to the market outside of Bitcoin? Like, you should be getting the yield.
Yeah. And you know, just to clarify, like, we're actually not taking anything. We're passing through as much as we can. Technically, we made it around number 3.8. I think maybe technically, like behind the scenes, we're getting like a few bips higher than that, but we just wanted to make it a clean 3.8. As deposits grow at River, we'll unlock higher rates. Actually, we'll just, you know, assuming like kind of we hit those cash deposits, we'll just be passing that back through to our clients.
So Freaks, this episode of TFTC is brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Do you have an old IRA or 401k that isn't keeping up with Bitcoin? Roll over into an Unchained Bitcoin IRA and take advantage of Bitcoin's long-term potential while enjoying tax-deferred growth. With Unchained, you hold real Bitcoin and keep control of your keys, reducing counterparty risk through their collaborative custody model, while Unchained handles the tax forms. It's very important. They handle the tax forms. Get started now with no setup fees and no account fee for the first year. Not only is this the only standard Bitcoin IRA where you can control keys, unlike other Bitcoin IRAs, you can take distributions directly in Bitcoin, avoiding exchange fees. Set up a Roth or traditional Bitcoin IRA for no charge today at unchained.com/TFTC and experience true ownership of your retirement savings. Go to unchained.com/TFTC. This rip is also brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. CoinKite builds the best Bitcoin hardware in the world. There is no second best when it comes to Bitcoin hardware. If you're looking to secure and self-custody your Bitcoin, you can get the MK4 or the ColdCard Q. ColdCard Q has a full keyboard, a QR scanner, NFC enabled, has a battery pack. Put some AA batteries in there. Create private public keys off pair in an air gap fashion. Private keys never have to touch an online device. They have their Sats card, which is the best way to give Bitcoin. If you're looking to gift Bitcoin for a wedding, a birthday party, a communion, a bar mitzvah, whatever it may be, tap the card on the back of your phone. You get a address to send to. You send it to that address. It lives on the Sats card. Again, there is no second best when it comes to Bitcoin hardware. The Bitcoin price seems to be going up. You want to take care of your security before Bitcoin goes to six figures. Make sure you get your Bitcoin off exchanges using CoinKite hardware. MK4, ColdCard Q. Go to CoinKite.com. Use the code TFTC. We have a code now, TFTC, for 5% off at checkout.
Yeah. Why this product? Why now? Because you guys are very particular about, I know you, as CEO, founder of River, you're almost maniacal about how you're building your business as efficiently as possible and being very particular about the products that you offer your clients. Why this product? Why now? Was there demand? Is this something that you wanted to surprise your clients with?
It was a surprise. There was no one asking for this product. This was an example of us synthesizing sort of the vibes of our clients, right? And really trying to understand what do people really truly want. It's sort of like kind of that Henry Ford quote, like if I asked people what they want, they would have said a faster horse. Mm-hmm. This was us really trying to think about, okay, like what is a magical thing we can build that people aren't even asking for, that they would really want. And so, we kept it pretty secret. We've been working on this quite a long time because actually behind the scenes, it seems simple, but there's a bank account behind the scenes for every client. This is like real regulated banking. Getting all of our T's crossed and I's dotted to make that happen was a lot of work. And, you know, we have, you know, a great bank partner. It's been really great to work with them. Really what we realized was we're entering this era where people want Bitcoin cash flows. But also we also saw that people had a lot of dollar savings still. You know, yes, on Twitter it might seem like nobody touches dollars, but in reality, like the vast majority of people still have a dollar savings account and a cash buffer, especially if they have families. They have often up to a year of cash just in case, even if they're really big Bitcoin believers. And so we saw that and we were like, you know what? We should help these people. We should build something that helps serve the need of, yes, I need this cash predictability in my life because that's the way the world still operates. But I also want to keep earning Bitcoin. And we saw that we could put these building blocks together to make this happen.
And I think the number one question I've seen from people reacting to the launch of this product is, this is awesome. How do you expand the product suite on top of this? Because you can imagine a scenario in which people have their cash balance on River. They're getting
the interest into Bitcoin, developing a stack, and then they don't want to interact with another institution. They just want to do everything from River. If I can hold my cash here and get interest in Bitcoin from that, why don't I just do everything here? Is that
that's sort of the direction
you want to take this? Yeah,
that's the direction, and it's one step at a time. You know, it might seem like we should just be able to flip a switch on, and all of a sudden we're all, like, full fiat banking suite. It takes time to build those things properly and safely. So you know, we're taking it step by step. And so, you know, on our roadmap is, you know, being able to have account and routing numbers so you can set up your direct deposit into here. And then, you know, we really want to help meet people's need to be able to pay their bills directly from the River account. So, you know, our vision for the future is for River, and for society, we believe that we're entering this dual currency era, like I described earlier. So what we're building is the financial application for that future, for this next phase of our monetary system. And so we want to be that app where you can keep your Bitcoin and your dollars. We want to be the most, trusted and transparent, you know, financial institution in the world. And we want to give you the financial services you need as we transition to this new world.
Let's talk about this new world, this dual currency world. Cause I've been talking to Parker. I just recorded with Parker about his exchange theory of value for Bitcoin. And I think that's, there's many people taking different sides, maybe not different sides, but there's like a spectrum of beliefs in terms of how long this dual currency system exists. Is it something where we have Bitcoin and the dollar living side by side for many decades and people save Bitcoin and spend dollars for the majority of our lives, or does it happen quicker? When I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, how long do you think this period of the dual system where people are predominantly saving in Bitcoin and spending in dollars exists?
I think it lasts quite a while. Yeah. And it's always possible I'm wrong. I'm not, Parker's an extremely gifted sort of macro analyst in this stuff. And so I would love to listen to that episode and hear what he says. I'm much more of, like, just looking at sort of what I see in the business and what I see sort of, like, on the ground. There's some interesting data points that have sort of influenced this opinion for me. One was spending time in Argentina. So I've spent a decent amount of time down there. And as I think a lot of people listening know, their currency is really, really bad. And it has been for a long time. The inflation in Argentina is insane. It's like 100% more a year. It's chilled out a little bit with the recent president, but nonetheless, it's still like a total disaster. Like, if you think the US inflation is bad, I mean, Argentina, you know, the prices change every week. So why is that interesting? So, if you look at Argentina, so their currency is totally impossible to save in. You can't put a business treasury in the Argentinian peso. You can't have a savings account in the Argentinian peso and have any expectation that that preserves its value even month to month. However, everyone still transacts in Argentinian pesos. And so despite the currency being terrible, all the transactions, at least day-to-day commerce, is happening in pesos because it is so sticky. It has also the power of the state sort of pushing this, but just the protocol of society is so sticky that even when the currency is trash, people still use it to transact, and they just save in other things and sort of swap into it when they need to spend it and swap out when they earn it. And that influenced kind of my thinking a lot. And it's possible that analogy just won't map to what's happening in the US, but I just sort of have this hunch that even if inflation continues to really pick up in the US, people are still shopping at the grocery store with dollars. They're just not saving it much.
Yeah, I guess that's the big question, is how fast, if at all, does inflation of the dollar rematerialize? I mean, it seems like it is. If you look at the Fed's rate cut and long-term bond yields, they're going in the direction that you would not assume that they would go in if we're going to have a rate cut regime moving forward. And then you look at the national debt, we're approaching $36 trillion. Doesn't seem like spending is going down. Obviously, Trump's talking a big game about fixing up the tax code, increasing tariffs. Yesterday, people were saying he's out there campaigning that he wants to eliminate the income tax, which would be incredible. That combination of tax changes would be highly inflationary, though, unless he pulls a Javier Milei and goes a Fuera across the board, which he's also been posturing. I guess that's the big question. I don't know if we're going to solve it here, but like, if Trump, number one, gets elected, brings in a new administration, do they have the mandate or the facilities to work throughout the federal government bureaucracy to actually initiate spending cuts that would make that tax regime not as inflationary as it possibly could be?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to depend on a lot of things. I think it depends on if they can win Congress, if they can win Senate, House, and White House, then we're maybe talking about some real things happening. I'm by no means, you know, extremely well versed in the ins and outs of, you know, how things work in D.C. when it comes to what you can just unilaterally cut in the executive branch and what you can't. I know it's very hard to fire federal workers. Maybe there's some loopholes. I think really, though, the difference this time around is that Trump is going to have a team that's way sharper and has learned the lessons from the past in his past administration. I think he's going to have fewer like sharks trying to sabotage his administration from the inside. But I think he's going to see equal or more resistance from, you know, the rest of the swamp. And so the question is how effectively will they be able to navigate that? And there's just bigger things like politically, you know, there, like, just if you do the math, there has to be cuts to military and entitlement spending. There has to be. So even if they control all the House and the White House, can they make those changes and win an election in 2 years? That's an open question.
Yeah, and it's such a fascinating time to be alive. I'm sure anybody could say this at any point in history, but truly is right now when you look at the juxtaposition of the bloated, ineffective, inefficient federal government with the private sector in the United States now, like looking at SpaceX, catch that 50-story rocket out of the air. I mean, you mentioned military spending, that's going to need to be cut. You look at, anti-war, I mean, objectively, countries need to be able to defend themselves. And when you look at companies like Anduril and what Palmer Luckey is doing to drive down the cost of being able to produce the military equipment necessary to protect yourself and even go on the attack if you need to. And you just look at what we're doing in Bitcoin, like the private sector in America, it seems like if we were allowed to just rip through all the red tape and not have to worry about the bureaucratic mess, and the federal government was actually thinking about spending, making each dollar they spend go as far as possible. Mm-hmm. Like the private market is producing solutions in a cost-effective way. And I am cautiously optimistic that if Trump gets in, we could see this new American renaissance where people realize that people are actually solving problems in the private sector, and you have an administration and a team that recognizes this as well and tries to facilitate the private sector solving a lot of these problems.
Yeah. I mean, I think what has to happen is there has to be a convincing plan for the American people to see that we can spend less and get more, right? Anyone who's run a company knows that there's a world where you get big and bloated and actually get a lot less done and spend a lot more than if you were small and lean. And what we see with the SpaceX is these guys can launch mass to orbit for 100x less, 1,000 times less per kilogram than the US government ever could have possibly dreamed of. And they have way less money. And so, like, what if we applied that thinking to the military or to entitlements, right? All of this spending, like if you look at like the culture in DC, it glorifies inputs, not outputs. I voted for this many billions of dollars to the military. I voted for this many billions of dollars to this foreign country. I voted for this many billions of dollars to healthcare. And like, why are we celebrating inputs? We need to move to a culture of celebrating results. And when you do that, you start to realize that, like, you know, actually, you can often get better results when you spend 10 times less.
Yeah. No, it was an event last year, and there was a fund focused on defense tech, and they were explaining the cost efficiencies of companies like Anduril in that defense tech space. And they're like, you could literally cut the military budget by 90% and get more done, get more outputs.
That's the red pill. Though the reality of the situation is you could probably cut both military and healthcare spending by 90% and make America safer and healthier.
That's actually
a true statement.
I agree. And I think the hardest thing to actually get to that a place where we're enacting change that enables that to happen is narrative with the public, because the public sees cutting military healthcare spending by 90%. And they say, oh, they've been conditioned via propaganda to focus on the inputs. Like they believe that you need billions and billions and trillions of dollars now to actually facilitate this economic activity that leads to goods and services in these particular sectors. And that's another thing that's making me cautiously optimistic, because I do think the propaganda, the marginal return on the propaganda is weakening significantly. And I would argue that it may not even be positive anymore. We may have reached the point in time where the marginal return on propaganda efforts from the entrenched swamp are negative, and people are beginning to realize, maybe not everybody, but I do think there is the vibe shift, if you will, happening.
I mean, in a way, what we're seeing really, if you step back, is we're seeing the fall of the old culture, this like ossified, slow moving corporate government monstrosity that values input, that values more social signal and credentials than actual results. And what's happening is the Silicon Valley type thinking from a business perspective. Now, you know, the political thinking of Silicon Valley is also shifting. It was very woke, but now that's changing. But that mentality that Silicon Valley brought to software has jumped into hardware and is now starting to jump. And these players who are early Silicon Valley people are now becoming some of the most powerful people in the world. And this is almost like the new sort of power shift, right? Like this culture's kind of fighting the old culture. And so we'll see if that continues to work. If Trump wins and Elon Musk truly does become this czar of cost cutting, you know, we'll see like this transition is real. The reins are being handed over to the Silicon Valley type thinkers.
Yeah. What do you have to say to the black pillars who are afraid of this? We don't want Elon having this much effect on the government. We don't want Peter Thiel types having this much effect on the economy. They're going to leverage their positions of influence and power now that they're closer to the government to benefit themselves.
Yeah. I mean, look, I understand the skepticism, but one, we can't let perfect be the enemy of the good. Two, I think if you actually look at Elon's actions, his values are about as close as aligned with like a freedom-oriented sort of like foundational American sort of archetype, you know, as you can get without being like way too picky. So look, I mean, I think it's easy to sit around and like pontificate and read like philosophy and say like, you know, I want my perfect sort of like thing, but this is what we have. And I think it's pretty obvious which what the future looks like if the existing people stay in power. And I think that the future with Elon types running things is still way better than what we have now.
Yeah. Well, how do you think Bitcoin begins to speak into this conversation, because obviously we've been watching this play out for the better part of a year now. Really the people that have come behind Trump, whether it's Peter Thiel, J.D. Vance is obviously his vice president on the ticket, and Elon, all this is happening, and it's this Silicon Valley archetype that is coming and really driving a narrative and helping people realize, like, we can do things better. Obviously, Trump was at the Bitcoin conference and saying we're going to do the Bitcoin Act and put Bitcoin in the Treasury Reserve, but it's still, I don't know if you're reading this as well, similarly as well, but it seems like Bitcoin isn't like as part of a focus, and I just watch everything that's going on in that area of the discourse right now, and I'm always like, just lean in a little bit harder to Bitcoin, because Bitcoin can accelerate everything you're trying to do.
You know, my take is, like, I don't expect Trump to ever get Bitcoin. I think, like,
I'm not talking about Trump. I'm talking about, like, the people behind him, like Musk and Thiel and J.D. Vance. And obviously they publicly posture positively in regards to Bitcoin. But, like, I'm looking at him like, you should have this as, like, a Bitcoin as an integral part of trying to achieve all these goals that you're talking about, because it's just jet fuel, pun intended, on everything you're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you look at what they're trying to accomplish, it's logical that they're not bringing it up too much. I don't know what they actually believe, like, deep down inside. Like, I think they're definitely not anti-Bitcoin. But, like, this is a political game, and they gain nothing by talking a lot about Bitcoin. It does not increase their chances of succeeding in this election. And so... and in fact, like, it probably makes them look more out of touch to the average American to be talking a lot about Bitcoin. The average person in the United States if you care about Bitcoin, you're probably not an undecided voter, right? So, they're focusing on the things that the average person who's like on the fence cares about, which is economics and immigration, trying to explain to the American people this connection between sound money and the problems today. I think there will be a time, I think, where that happens. We've come a long way in that being mainstream discourse, but I think for the demographics you want to influence in a presidential election, it's just way too still academic sounding.
This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores. Connect your wallets or custodial accounts and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to Zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC, $40 off.
This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Salt of the Earth. You got to be hydrating, freaks. And while you're hydrating, you got to be getting your electrolytes. This is the best electrolytes mix that I've ever come into contact with. Pink Himalayan salt with calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, no sugar. It tastes incredible. My favorite is the orange and the pink lemonade. Go to drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code TFTC when you make your purchase and you'll get 15% off. I'm telling you, get on it, freaks. You're going to love this stuff.
Yeah, it is funny. And even though it's not front and center, it is, the last 2 weeks have proven that at least the central banking layer of society is worried about Bitcoin. You had two papers come out from the ECB and the Minneapolis Fed where both of them sort of admitted, like, yeah, Bitcoin is here to stay and it's probably going to go up a lot, but you should make it illegal or pigeonhole it.
Better product than what they're selling.
Yeah, it really is. But speaking of products and selling, like, I agree with you. It probably is a bit too out there and unnecessary to be forcing Bitcoin to the front now.
And I do think that they understand Bitcoin to an extent. I think a lot of them are confused by crypto as well. But I do think over time, as what I'm getting at is, I think a product like the interest product that you just launched, given like if that gets built out, gets adoption by River users, and then you develop a track record, and you guys, which you've done historically, but very transparent with your reports and how your users are interacting and using, interacting with and using River. Like if we get a year, 2 years of data of people using this interest bearing account, and you're able to say, here's how much they would have had in cash, here's how much Bitcoin they stacked and how much that Bitcoin's worth. That's going to be a, oh my God, why isn't everybody doing this moment?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I think from the vantage point we have, and that a lot of Bitcoin Twitter misses, is like, you have to meet people where they are, right? If you want to orange pill more people, like you have to meet them where they are. We got a few people sort of like criticizing us because we're
You're short Bitcoin.
Dollars, and like, who would ever have a dollar? And it's kind of, it's like, that's fine to have that opinion, but you'll never run a business, right? Like you'll never be able to like win people over. Like you have to take people by the hand, meet them where they are. And this is a start on the journey to Bitcoin. And what we're trying to do is like, we're trying to lower that barrier to entry, right? It's like, now all of a sudden, when people are asked, what's River? I don't even need to say, you need to take a large chunk of your cash and buy Bitcoin, this thing that's really confusing to you that you still don't quite understand. I can say, if you deposit cash into River, that cash is super safe and you just earn Bitcoin with it. It's like lowering the barrier to entry for more. And then they, oh, all of a sudden they have a little bit of Bitcoin. They didn't have to pay for it. And now all of a sudden they can start learning more. They can start playing around with it. You know, I think sort of like this like super hardcore ethos where you forget where you were when you started, right? A lot of people forget kind of where they were mentally when they first got into Bitcoin, and they think everyone should just jump to the end of the story.
Yeah. What did the backtest of data show?
What do you mean backtest? Oh, of like the numbers?
Yeah.
Yeah. It showed that the effective interest rate is like the teens. If you like over the like last 4 years, it depends on how you do the analysis. Like if you had earned this interest rate, that's what it would have been. If you like, there was a period over like a year or two where there was a 0% interest rate more or less. So, you just wouldn't have earned much Bitcoin then, but, it's like drastically better than any sort of like money market or savings account you could have possibly had.
Yeah. That's what I think is really going to be the flipping of the switch moment for a lot of people, just seeing the data out there. It's like, if you have friends using a product like this and they use it for a couple of years and they're like, hey, I've parked $100,000 in this account, and over time I accumulated, over a year, I accumulated $4,000 worth of Bitcoin. A year later, that Bitcoin's worth $8,000. Oh shit.
And it didn't make the cut for launch, but we're launching a calculator for doing exactly this. So you'll be able to backtest any amount, any like time frame you want on our website. And so that'll be launching soon, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, that's only one of multiple products that you launched since we last talked. I mean, the other big one, was it last month or 2 months ago now at this point? The proof of reserves, mm-hmm. Massive props.
Thank you. Yeah, we wanted to do, a lot of people think, I think from that launch, they think we invented the concept of proof of reserve, which is not the case. I think we're kind of doing like the Apple playbook, like take something like that technically existed in a user unfriendly way before and make it really like tight and like super user friendly and design first. And so that's what we did with the proof of reserves. We wanted to, like I said earlier, our vision is to be the most trusted financial institution in the world. And to do that, we have to be transparent. And so with proof of reserves, we prove every month that our assets that we control, the Bitcoin in our custody, exceeds the liabilities, the Bitcoin that we owe clients. And we're pushing, and we open sourced our code that does this. And we tried to make it as easy as possible for people to understand how this works and to verify it themselves. And we're, the reason we open sourced it too is to try and push the rest of the industry. And I've already had multiple exchanges reach out on, to ask like, you know, how we did this and get some more insights into like what are the operational implications and things like this. So hopefully we see some more people doing this. And really what we want to do is I want to move the industry forward so that we don't start getting into a world with paper Bitcoin. I want to normalize proof of reserves now so that all the other Bitcoin exchanges don't start getting tempted through forces, maybe political forces or economic forces, to create Bitcoin out of thin air and start walking down that slippery slope.
Yeah, I think with the emergence of the ETFs and more recently the options on those ETFs, a product like proof of reserves is desperately needed to keep people in check, because that's particularly when options get launched and people see what you can do by leveraging those financial tools. That's when you start to see the paper products come into market.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you know, this made a splash. We're going to keep making a splash. We got some of the biggest companies sort of paying attention to this. And so hopefully we can make some changes there and get these guys on board. Because I think it's really important for the industry.
I do as well. And speaking of big companies making a splash, that was the last 12 to 16 hours on Twitter has been about Microsoft's board having a resolution at the next shareholder meeting about an assessment of whether or not they should put Bitcoin on their balance sheet, invest in Bitcoin is how they have it worded. I think that's poor wording, poor framing. It should be incorporating Bitcoin into their corporate treasury strategy. But nonetheless, one of the largest companies in the world is officially asking shareholders to weigh whether or not Microsoft should put Bitcoin on their balance sheet, which is pretty massive. And bringing it up too, because another thing that you guys have launched, just a research report about businesses holding Bitcoin, and that was full with some rich data. Obviously, you guys are catering to, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think predominantly to a different sector of the business market, but businesses are accumulating Bitcoin, particularly businesses that don't need to go through a shareholder vote to get it on the balance sheet.
Yes, 100%. And yeah, no, I think this is a big thing, the fact that the shareholder vote is happening at all. And I believe the details are it's a vote to analyze whether they should. Mm-hmm. And so, but still, it's a start. Basically, what I think we're at this interesting point here, where to date, we've seen a lot of businesses accumulating Bitcoin for their treasury, buying Bitcoin. We serve largely small and medium-sized businesses, anywhere from sort of like entities like trusts to operating companies, construction companies, real estate firms, cleaning companies, plumbing companies, buying Bitcoin for their treasury. And what all these companies have in common, though, is they're run by what I call an orange-pilled dictator. If you look at every company that's bought Bitcoin to date, they're run by an orange-pilled dictator. So really, you know, these companies buying Bitcoin has just been downstream of the owner becoming orange-pilled. And so, so sort of business onboarding to Bitcoin today has really just been an extension of like the individuals becoming orange-pilled. So that's a very like quickly growing trend. And what we see, and so what still hasn't happened is the companies like the Microsofts of the world buying Bitcoin, like these run by committee businesses, these like behemoths that have no founder anymore. There's no dictator. There's like political forces, and it's all very like kind of, you know, who's really running everything. You know, the big companies that have bought Bitcoin to date still are run by that archetype. You know, you have Elon, you have Michael Saylor, you have Jack Dorsey. We're at this transition period where like, who's going to be the first CFO at one of these like run by committee companies to say the first principles of the macro environment are different now. What worked before for treasury management is not going to work going forward because the dollar is fundamentally changing and we're entering this dual currency era. Who's going to be the first CFO to have the balls to say that and put their career on the line for that? Because that's typically not what the CFO role gets selected for, is people who are, you know, willing somewhat to make risky. Big.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that will happen at some point. The question is when and who is it going to be?
Do you have any ideas of when and who it may be?
I honestly don't. Yeah. I think it's gonna be one person does it and then the dominoes fall, right? And I really have no idea on what company that could be. And is it the CEO or is it the CFO that's more important for this decision at one of these big companies? Maybe both. But the CFO probably has to be on board.
Yeah. No, it's interesting about this shareholder proposal. It's an assessment. It seems like if you dive into it, it looks like somewhat of an activist shareholder who has a sizable chunk essentially forced it on the docket. And that many people are taking that being like, oh, this is just some gimmick by some zealot Bitcoiner who owns a lot of Microsoft stock and is trying to like use it as a marketing tool. But I don't think that should be understated. I think it is being understated. Like that in and of itself, we're talking about like attack vectors on the fiat system. That is one. There, whether you recognize it or not, like it or not, think it's a gimmick or not, these people exist now. And this Bitcoin activist investor trend, I think, is going to accelerate significantly. And so whether it's a CFO deciding to make the bold move to basically advocate for putting Bitcoin on a large corporation's treasury or not, I think the emergence of this Bitcoin activist investor should not be taken lightly.
Totally. And I think what we've seen since 2020 was, you know, pre-2020 or so, you know, Bitcoin was still this thing where we were kind of just memeing, like we believed in it, but we were all kind of nobodies, right? In the grand scheme of things, we, you know, we had our own thing going on. And then all of a sudden, like important people started becoming part of this. And some of us became more important. And, you know, next thing we know, like the potential next president of the United States is at the Bitcoin conference talking about Bitcoin strategic reserves for the US, and like all these memes that we kind of were just like, you know,
palling around
on the internet, kind of like, you know, we didn't really know if this thing would work, is real now. And so narratives matter, incentives matter. And, I don't think there's any slowing down this train at this point.
Neither do I. Train doesn't stop. I mean, that Lynn Alden meme goes two ways. The increase in the debt, riding that train, is not going to stop. And the Bitcoin memeing is not going to stop. And it is crazy. I mean, I've said this many times the last few months. This year's Bitcoin conference was an oh shit moment. And I think it was particularly because we had a live RHR and it was packed 600 people. And then Matt and I were reflecting on like the first live RHR we did at the Bitcoin conference in 2019. It was literally on picnic benches in a parking garage, like on the roof of a parking garage in San Francisco. And I think as an industry, we should really take a step back and appreciate how far we've come in such a short, that's 5 years, like going from the top of a parking garage on a picnic bench to this conference in Nashville with the president saying that he's going to put Bitcoin on the United States Treasury. It's insanely fast. And not only should we appreciate it, but we should use that as a checkpoint and think forward, like what can happen in the next 5 years. And I think what we're seeing now, whether it's Microsoft having to have shareholders weigh whether or not they should even assess to put Bitcoin on the balance sheet, or the U.S., talking about it, like I think that's a product of, we're a $1 trillion market now. And I had James Check on from Check on Chain earlier this week, and I think that's one thing I took away from that conversation, is that we've stayed over $1 trillion market cap for quite some time, an amount of time where it's sort of been normalized. Bitcoin is a $1 trillion asset now. It's not in the middle of a blow off bull top where it touches a trillion and is destined to go back down. It seems like it has cemented itself as a $1 trillion asset. And that just psychologically has people thinking differently about it.
Totally. And it's gotten these important institutional stamps of approval. You know, sort of like the BlackRock stamp, sort of like the powers that be have almost like gone okay, or like kind of okay with this now. And, you know, as much as, you know, I think inherently we're sort of like anti-authoritarian or sort of like kind of skeptical of this kind of stuff in Bitcoin land. That's been a really big needle mover for just institutional adoption. On the other side of things, I see now like the types of clients we see, it's like these aren't necessarily like Twitter, deep Bitcoin, cypherpunk people anymore. It's like, you know, mothers who instinctually understand something's kind of not right with the system and feel like they need some Bitcoin. Maybe they can't exactly explain how the Fed works, or, you know, they, you know, couldn't like spit out inflation numbers and stuff like that. But they like deep down inside, their instincts tell them like something's kind of off. Like this Bitcoin thing is like, you know, it's scarce. Like this is what I should be doing. There's something there that just like kicking in people's heads. And it's no longer this sort of, you know, anarcho-capitalist, but really like plugged, highly online thing anymore. It's bigger than that now.
Yeah. And that, I mean, speaking to the aversion to institutions and much larger pools of capital coming in, and going back to the fact that we're a $1 trillion market cap, like if you want the price to go up, like the amount of money you need to come in is significant. Like if, mm-hmm. like, and it's not going to be from your wage cuck DCA or moving forward. Like retail got us to this point, and now that we're at $1 trillion established as a $1 trillion asset, going up into higher stratospheres is going to take these large amounts of capital, like it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's largely true. But I also still think there's a lot left of the retail demand to unlock. You're right about sort of just the market dynamics and the need for the big money, but there's still a lot of retail left to come to this thing.
Yeah. What do you think this cycle's like? Are you feeling bullish right now? Are you bullish?
I'm pretty bullish. I'm always bullish, but look, would I selfishly love like another 6 months to get more stuff built? Yes. What we've seen, interestingly, is so we had the big price run up in February and March, and those were like March was a huge month for us. But and then the price has just sort of like, you know, kind of like stayed, you know, in the 50s to 60s. But what we've seen is like sustained high business. Like the boringness of the market over the last 8 months, 7 months hasn't slowed down the people sort of coming to this. It's just at a new elevated rate. And so that's an interesting observation. And I think it means like the people showing up now are, I think they're more like permanently here. And I think we're really just like starting to just get like mainstream society coming into this thing.
Yeah.
So I'm very bullish.
I am as well. And talking about like preparing for the bull market from a company infrastructure perspective, that's something I love following you on Twitter, because you are, again, maniacal about making sure that you build the technical architecture of your company as efficiently as possible. And you're obsessed with this code base Elixir. What is going on with Elixir, and how does it enable you guys to scale when the bull market comes?
That's the programming language we use. And yeah. It's a programming language. It's built on this kind of platform from the 90s called the Erlang open telecom platform. It was built by Ericsson to power high availability phone systems. And what somebody realized about 10 years ago was you could build really great internet software on this thing, because it's meant to basically be highly reliable and support lots of simultaneous people using it. And so I kind of realized that early on, that this would be like the perfect tool to build a Bitcoin company on. And it's turned out to be quite true. And it allows us basically, without getting too technical, it allows you to use your compute resources much more efficiently than a lot of programming languages for this kind of software. And it also allows us, and what that allows us to do is to keep everything in one place. So you don't need to build this like sprawling like set of systems that need to talk to each other, which is much harder to maintain. You can kind of just have everything in one place. And so that allows us to keep things simpler and move faster and be more secure. And so what I really push on at River is simplicity. But in terms of what we're like, what's left to build to keep preparing for new levels of scale, it's a lot of automation. It's a lot of like that iceberg beneath the surface. you know, the reason we're not shipping a new feature every week is because I would say like 50 to 60% of our developer time is building stuff behind the scenes to keep everything running well and safe. There's lots of systems that we need to keep upgrading around payment processing automation, fraud detection, tooling to help our customer service operate more efficiently and serve larger amounts of clients. All that kind of stuff is like sort of like this big iceberg beneath the surface of the water. And the app, the River app you see is like the tip of the iceberg for what's actually going on behind the scenes. So there's just always more to build there. But we have some cool features coming down the road.
You want to tease any here? Or is it a...
I'll tease, let's see. I'll tease something. We have something coming in, let's say a month or two, that's going to make... it's going to be like the new standard, I think, for making a Bitcoin or crypto app secure. It's going to be, I think, a real game changer for security and make keep you safe from pretty much any attack you can imagine. And so that's all I'll tease for now. And we have a cool name for it too, but I'm not going to give the name yet.
I like that tease. I like that tease. That makes me feel comfortable. No, I think again, just observing you build this company, be as transparent and public about it. I love your Elixir tweets, and when you think about it, like if this wave of retail is coming, and historically each new wave is bigger than the last, and we've seen companies like Coinbase. I mean, it's the easiest one to pick on because they continually fuck it up. Like once this wave comes, that their systems cannot not handle it. And I think having a focus on building simple systems that can scale is extremely important if you're looking to be there when these waves are coming.
Yeah. You know, I've never worked at Coinbase and I don't have like super detailed insights into, you know, how their systems operate, but I do have a hunch that a lot of the issues that they face is because they overcomplicated things.
Yeah. What is one thing, prediction, idea that you have that you think most people would disagree with in our industry?
I guess I think my most heretical opinions are one sort of around this dual currency era. I think that commerce primarily stays in dollars for the foreseeable future. I think that sort of a Trump presidency that's effective and reins in the financial health of the US government, which is still a big TBD, actually like makes that even longer. And so I think that's just a reality. I think that it doesn't mean we should never keep building cool like Bitcoin wallet stuff and, you know, keep trying to make Bitcoin work as a medium of exchange. We absolutely should. I think though, it's really important to be pragmatic and realistic and understand timeframes. I think the Lightning Network is a great B2B, custodian to custodian, rail. I don't think it's the answer for self-sovereign P2P transactions. I think we need something different. So maybe that's another one. I think Nostr is cool. I see it as the backup to Twitter. And I think that it will stay that way unless if Twitter continues to be run by Elon. And so I think Nostr will maybe have its time, you know, in the sun if that changes. But I'm kind of skeptical about that in the near future. But I could be wrong. I would love to see Nostr thrive. And I'm glad it exists. So I think those are my most heretical opinions.
Going back to P2P payments, is there anything people are working on right now that you think is purpose fit for that particular use case outside of Lightning?
Absolutely. I mean, actually, this is going to sound really heretical.
I like that.
Objectively, the best P2P payments experience today is Tether on Tron or some like shitcoin chain. Sending dollars KYC free internationally is what the vast majority of the world wants. And it's by far the best UX today. And there's no like liquidity lockups or anything like that. It just works. Is it centralized? Yes, but it works, you know, and like that's all people care about at the end of the day. They don't care about the ideology behind it. So like, that's just really an objective truth. The question is like, can we get Bitcoin that good? And we should try. Ecash is, I think, a really like Cashew and these like Infetti and these Ecash projects are really cool. I think there's still big open questions. There's like both a sort of pragmatic regulatory perspective. These things are technically centralized. And so will they be able to scale and serve lots of people without getting shut down? Open question. But I think the bigger thing is, the bigger thing holding Bitcoin back as a medium of exchange is just economic. People don't want to use Bitcoin to transact. Like, I think the thought experiment is, let's say we had a perfectly self-sovereign, zero fee way to transact Bitcoin P2P with like no censorship resistance whatsoever. Would Bitcoin be a popular transactional currency today? I'm skeptical. Honestly, I'm skeptical. I think like the dollar is still like the global unit of account. That's what people still want to transact. Will that be the case forever? No, that will end someday. And we need to be ready for that. And we need to keep building for that future. But maybe that's an ECAT. Maybe that looks like eCash. Maybe that looks like a combination of eCash, Lightning, you know, centralized custodians, and it's all just kind of working in symbiosis. And there's no like silver bullet, self-sovereign, censorship resistant rail, but like the emergent sort of like group of these things effectively gives people that. There's ARC, which I think is another like TBD project. I would love to see it succeed. So yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I'm excited about ARC. I think I did the demo for Second, which is building their ASP and their ARC protocol, and I talked to Alex Berg a lot about it. He seems to be wholly convinced that the combination of ARC and Lightning could significantly increase the user experience and improve the user experience around Lightning, particularly channel management. Channel management is the biggest hurdle for Lightning to scale in a way that makes it easy for individuals to reap the benefits in the same way that the B2B use case is reaping it right now. Channel management just needs to be automated and something that people don't even have to think about. And I think the people building ARC are pretty convinced that that is a solution to make that possible. Then we need, then they say, like, if you really want to take it to its furthest positive extreme, you need something like Covenant's version of Bitcoin.
Yeah. And, you know, I've admittedly not been, say, super close to the Covenant's debate. I need to do more reading on that. Because, you know, if it turns out that, you know, we really do need covenants to scale Bitcoin, then that's an important conversation to have. I just need to do the reading to really understand if that's the case.
I do as well. I need to do a deeper dive. Let's end it with some inspiration. Are we going to win? Are you optimistic?
I'm optimistic.
Are we getting mandibles? Or are we getting a better future?
What's that mean?
Mandibles is it's a book that basically says we're going to go into a sovereign debt crisis and things are going to be a Mad Max scenario.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, I sure hope not. I view Bitcoin as a way to bring back institutional trust. And I think that what my hope for is that Bitcoin helps lead to better and healthier institutions, both in the United States and globally, because it shifts the balance of power back to something decentralized, back to the people, and it deletes some of this, you know, corrupting, ossifying power that central banking has given the government. And you know, I want to live in a country where I can trust the institutions. I want to live in a country with effective institutions. I don't want to live in a Mad Max situation. And so my hope is that politically we win. I hope that Bitcoin helps accelerate that political culture shift and the economic and sort of macro monetary shift to keep these institutions in check. And so I very much think we're going to win. I wouldn't be building this if I didn't. And, you know, I'm going to keep acting as if that's the case.
Well, you're crushing it, sir. I mean, the last 3 months alone, you guys have brought very valuable products to market. Very excited for this cash interest product into Bitcoin. I think it's a game changer. Like I said earlier, it's going to set a standard. It's a forcing function to force others to provide this to their customers, which will benefit everybody in the long run. Proof of reserves, talked about for the better part of a decade now. I think Fidelity wrote their paper on it like literally 10 years ago at this point. And you guys are bringing it to market. And the type of Bitcoin company you want to see, that's what you're building, Mr. Leishman. Leading by example and forcing everybody to come with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We have a lot left to build and we have a long way to go, but we're going to win.
We are going to win. Peace and love, freaks. Okay.